and welcome to another episode of Ice World. I'm Nadia Frontier, and in this podcast, I'm chatting to the ordinary people who do extraordinary jobs to make sure that the work at the British Antarctic Survey continues in the polar regions. Today, I'm joined by Michaela Boke, who works at the British Antarctic Survey as the Deployment Support Manager. This means that she coordinates the training and support to staff who are about to live and work in the frozen regions with the British Antarctic Survey. Michaela has done a range of jobs with the British Antarctic Survey over the last 5 years, and I'm really excited to find out more about how she arrived in her current role and what it's like to help so many people who are starting on their polar journey. Michaela, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Nadia.
We are recording this at the start of August, which is about a month before this huge meeting in September based at the British Antarctic Survey in Cambridge called Pre-Deployment Training, or PDT as the acronym goes. Can you explain broadly what this is?
Yeah, so PDT is where we bring together everyone that's due to head south in the coming season. We bring everyone together for about 2 weeks, and they do a range of training to keep them safe and make sure that they have the best possible experience in Antarctica.
And who is attending this training week? What selection of people have you got, and how many stations do they represent?
Okay, so we've got a range of people attending. We've got our Antarctic employment staff, which are the core staff supporting our stations. And then we also have members from our Cambridge team also joining. And it's a really good time for everyone to come together, get to know each other and be ready for the season ahead.
Amazing. And how long until generally these people are about to be deployed?
So pre-deployment training happens in September, and then people start deploying anywhere from mid-October, really, so not long beforehand. It's only 4 weeks away now, and I'm really excited to meet everyone who's joining BAS in September.
And what's the timescale of this period in Cambridge? How many days will it cover?
So it'll be across 2 weeks, and the first week is normally sort of our BAS training, and then in the second week we have our medical unit come and give first aid training, so that's a really exciting time, and I really enjoy that part.
Well, that's a pretty huge event to pull off. How are your stress levels right now?
Stress levels are good, yeah. I've got a good team around me. We've got 4 weeks to go, and yeah, just smashing through the to-do list now.
Sounds like a fun job, and also quite a fun thing to coordinate, getting so many people together. There's always quite a nice atmosphere on those events, and I think in the broader context of the Cambridge sphere, it's nice to have lots of new excited faces. I remember there's quite a few hands-on sessions like first aid training and firefighting. Can you paint a bit of a picture about how these sessions go and why people have to do these either side of the pre-deployment training?
Yeah, so there's so many different sessions that people do. We start with introducing people to BAS, giving them an idea of what the science is we're doing and why it's so important. And then we also teach them about, you know, how to protect the environment, how to protect themselves when they're there. They do things like biosecurity training, making sure that we're not taking things to Antarctica that are going to damage the environment. They learn about how to keep their mental health protected while they're in the Antarctic. You know, being in a remote location is challenging, and people are often not prepared for that. So it's a really important part of their training.
Do you see people come to you during those weeks, maybe quite unexpected about the level of content they're receiving? Because for starting a new job, it's pretty intense. And I think generally a first job is like setting up your email and signing some HR forms. But this is like next level. I mean, there's so much detail. I don't think I actually understood a lot of what was happening at PDT. Like the FCDO come and speak to us,
yeah,
and they tell us about our roles and responsibility from a political perspective.
I think, yeah, it's quite overwhelming for some people. And I do try to remind them to be kind to themselves. And it's a lot of information to take in. We're not expecting them to remember everything in that week, but it's a great time to introduce them to everything that they're going to be expecting in the Antarctic. It is an overwhelming time, but it's a great time as well, and they get to meet people that are potentially going to be lifelong friends. So it's great.
That's true. There's always definitely lots of memories talked about from PDT and first meetings. And there's also other really wild bits of training, like the personal survival training. So that's people who go onto a research ship and how to survive in the water. Have you done that one before?
I have, yeah. That is probably the most memorable training that I did when I first did pre-deployment training. You go with a group of about 14 people to an external provider in Norwich, and they teach you how to cope if you were to need to leave the ship in an emergency. And a lot of it's theory, but there's also a practical session, which is humbling, to say the least. You have to put on the immersion suit, you have to put on all the equipment, and then you jump into the water and they make you go through all the sorts of scenarios you might end up in, getting into life rafts, flipping the life rafts over, being winched out of the water. It is quite the experience.
I mean, that's also another really great way of meeting new colleagues for first comers.
Yeah, it's definitely a team bonding experience. I still remember somebody pulling me into the raft when I was doing it.
Literally getting thrown into the deep end. Do you have any specific conversations that you've had with people during the PDT training that have been particularly memorable?
I get quite a lot of the same from a lot of people, which is, you know, this has been my lifelong dream. I can't wait to go. And that is just so special to me. And I love to talk about it with people. I love to hear what's motivated them to go south and just to see where they're starting and then where they end up when they go south. That is just incredible.
And is the number of people returning year on year roughly about the same? And do you find that the returner pool of people are a bit more relaxed, like they know the drill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have around 50-50 on the returners and new starters side of things. In terms of winterers, we generally have less returners because that is such a big commitment of time. But we do have people coming back each summer, and yeah, they know the drill, they know their job, they know what works for them and what it's like on station, the day-to-day living, what they're doing in their job. But for new starters, you know, they don't know any of that. They don't know what they need to wear when they're leaving each building. They don't know what kit works for them. They don't even know when breakfast, lunch and dinner is. So PDT is the time where people get that sort of information for the first time. And I always say that the returners in the room are their best source of knowledge. Chat to them and find out what to expect.
And there's also this really social side to the pre-deployment training week or two. Do you also organise that? Things that have happened in the past, such as a barbecue and a ceilidh?
Yeah, no, that's actually, yeah, probably one of my favourite parts of pre-deployment training. We normally have like a welcome dinner on the first night, which is quite fancy. You know, we do like a two-course meal and the directors come and there's a speech and it's like the first welcome. And then we have the barbecue where we invite lots of Bass Cambridge staff, which is a really nice time for everyone to meet and get to know each other, maybe talk to people they don't normally talk to. And on the Thursday, we have a ceilidh, which a lot of people are hesitant to get involved in, but generally they love it.
I can imagine it's quite intimidating, but is there a lead ceilidh band with somebody describing the dances to you? Is that how it works?
Yeah, we've got a really good ceilidh band that we've been using for the last few years, and they are really good at getting people involved. Beforehand, they tend to go to the bar and encourage people to come and join. And yeah, they're really good at explaining it to people that have never done it before. So yeah, it's a great night. I love it. Can't wait.
It's also quite an important Antarctic introduction because I did my first ceilidh in Antarctica, which is ironic. That's where I experienced Scottish culture. But it is pretty useful because there is quite a high proportion of Scottish people that often go south. And I wonder if it's because they're quite hardy and they're used to these really cold conditions.
No need for acclimatisation there.
And let's go back to the start. What's your personal story? How long have you been working with the British Antarctic Survey?
So I've been with BAS for about 5 years now. I joined in the research, development and support team, so on the science side of BAS. And I worked with all of the scientists across the science teams, helping them with anything from arranging conferences and travel to buying equipment for their fieldwork. So it was from there that I got to understand the wide range of science that we do and how impressive it is that we're getting all of this stuff to such remote locations and carrying out incredible science. So it was from there that I really was like, I really want to work in ops. I want to go and work with ops. And I love working with people. So I sort of combined those two things and this job popped up and it was just perfect.
That's amazing. How long had you been working in the REDS team, which stands for
Research, Development and Support?
Thank you.
Yeah, so I'd been working in that team for about 2.5 years. And then, yeah, sort of gained knowledge across BAS and then applied for the job in operations. And here I am.
Wow, Michaela. So this is your coming up to your third year in as pre-deployment support manager. So you're on your third wave of seeing people come through.
Yeah.
Wow. Impressive.
It's really nice. And I've got to know people over that time as well. So getting to know the returners and seeing them come to PDT each year, although they're colleagues, it feels like I'm seeing friends again, which is really nice.
When you were in your science supporting role, what's the weirdest thing that you had to order for a scientist?
Not weirdest thing, but I remember having to rush to Argos once to go and get a GoPro for someone that was doing some whale work. I remember them coming back from their field work and showing me footage of the whales and just thinking, wow, it was really worth rushing to Argos for that.
I love this unique perspective that it's given you into science.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. If you know, it was, I quite enjoyed the rush of finding things. You know, if people really needed something for their field work, I would make it my mission. Like, I must get this. It was really cool to be a part of that. But also they were just so, so grateful. And I felt like I was part of the science. And I think that's what's always drawn me to these roles is I'm not a scientist, but if I can support science, that's what I want to do.
And how do you think that scientific support is communicated? Because a high proportion of people at pre-deployment training are not necessarily scientists, but going down in different support roles. Is the science quite a large focus of this training week? Because ultimately it is the biggest purpose in addition to politics of why these stations are operating.
Yeah, I think it's something that we try to work on each year, getting that balance of practical training and safety training, but also making people realise why they're there and the importance of their job. We've included more science talks this year to try and boost that. And also when people get to station, we try to have science talks from the people that are working there with them at the time. Sort of gives them a perspective and makes them feel valued in the job that they're doing.
And there's also an exhibition of scientists that are working at the British Antarctic Survey. They have stalls and it's often quite interactive where people come up and talk to different research teams. They've got like resin animals on display and oceanographic sampling equipment.
Yeah, we've got that again this year, which is really exciting and a really nice way for people to show off what they're doing in a more practical sense. It gives people actually an idea of what they're doing on the ground. I remember when I first attended PDT, there was someone with trackers for birds and they were telling me that it would track when the birds were going in and out of the water and feeding. And I just thought that was really cool.
Amazing. And then what originally attracted you to wanting to work with the British Antarctic Survey? So you are born and raised in Cambridge?
That's right, yeah. I'd had my eye on bass for a while and previously, I was working in the Department of Medical Genetics at Cambridge University, almost doing an identical role. So when the role popped up at Bass, I thought, well, I can't not apply for that. You know, I've been told it's such a great place to work. And I put in my application and the rest was history.
Did you want to go to Antarctica since the start and how many years did it take?
It's actually funny you ask this because when I first joined Bass, I was so nervous at the thought of going south. I didn't think I would ever go south anyway in the role that I was in. And when people brought it up, I would sort of push it to the side. I was a bit nervous, you know, didn't really think that that was for me, mainly because I'd not been away from home before. So when I got this job, it hit me that I'm actually going south. This is incredible. And as soon as the excitement kicked in, all of the nerves were pushed to the side and yeah, I was going south.
So what was your first experience going south?
So I started in September 2023 and I was planned to go south the following March. But just 2 months after I started, an opportunity came up for me to deploy to Rotherhithe and I'd only been given 3 weeks notice. I said yes, because I couldn't pass up that opportunity. And yeah, I had to rush to get everything sorted. There was a lot to sort out in a short space of time. Medicals, making sure I had my sea survival techniques training, you know, thinking about what do I need to pack? What do I need to take? And it sort of gave me an understanding of what other people go through when they're preparing to go to the Antarctic.
Could you have imagined being in a similar position, leaving for up to 18 months?
Personally, I don't think I would have been able to do that. So I really appreciate the people that can put their lives on hold at such short notice. It is an incredible thing that we ask people to do when we're sending them south for those periods of time. But yeah, I think, like I said, from my experience, it gave me an understanding of what people have to go through. All of the questions that you get from your family when you're leaving, you know, it's a lot of overwhelming things to think about. You're not just thinking about yourself, you're thinking about other people as well. Packing to go for a winter, I always think about that. How much shower gel are you supposed to take for 18 months?
And deodorant as well.
I know. That's one thing you don't want to forget.
That's so true. And you've only got a limited space and you want to have some home comforts in addition to that. So
yeah,
what to prioritise? How much chocolate as well? all these questions, which you put an amazing guidance document together to help people try to understand these questions in addition to knowing the dinner times. So you went to Rotherhithe, you had 3 weeks notice, which is really not much at all. What were your first impressions like when you got to station?
It was overwhelming, I have to say. There's things that you just don't think are going to be difficult. You know, just day-to-day life is so much more complicated in Antarctica. I think I forgot my coat or my boots or one item that I needed to leave the building every single time I was going in and out. And it was just getting into that routine of putting all my kit on, remembering to take my radio, getting to know who everyone is, trying to know who everyone is when they've got sunglasses and a hat on is just a lot, isn't it? And I say to people, be kind to yourself in the first couple of weeks. It feels like crazy and like you don't understand anything, you don't know what you're doing, but it all clicks after the first couple of weeks and then you feel like you're at home.
Do you think there was something particularly that you found quite strange in those initial weeks?
I think sharing a room was interesting for me. I've never done that before. I didn't go to university. I've never done that kind of experience. And obviously carrying a radio everywhere you go is interesting and overwhelming with the amount of information that's coming through, and knowing what is for you and what's for other people is challenging. So you're always listening to the radio when you first get there.
And there are so many acronyms and so many different locations. And I also think I just like actually wanted to just turn it off and not listen to it, because I also felt like I couldn't live my life because it was dictated by a constant stream of radio talk. I mean, absolute kudos to people who work in the operations tower.
Absolutely.
That have just like 4 different radios giving them information. You must have an amazing brain in order to be able to silence that out and carry on with your life.
And I think when I got home as well, not hearing the radio was also quite jarring.
That's so true. And not having to tag out as well. You're like, oh, I can walk out of my door and it's okay.
Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it?
So what keeps you coming back? You say you're up to 5 years now and you're based in Cambridge. So what's the hook for you? Are you hoping to still be deployed to the polar regions each year?
I hope so, yeah. The thought of not going south again would be really sad now that I've experienced it a couple of times. But deploying south isn't what keeps me at Bass. I think the people at Bass are what keep me here. And just being able to witness people's first time going to the Antarctic is something that I'm never going to get bored of. And supporting people that were once nervous like me is also something that I never get bored of. I get such satisfaction from helping people that were in the same situation as me to have the best time ever.
And you can absolutely relate to it because you personally have had that experience. What's your next plan for going south?
I haven't got anything solid planned yet, but I'm hoping to deploy to Rotherhithe for about a month in April or May next year.
Okay.
So I'm hoping to see kind of the end of the summer season just before winter, so that I can check in on the winters, see how they're doing and see how they're feeling coming up to their winter.
You've got a lot of names to know.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, I try to get to know people as much as I can at pre-deployment training. Obviously, it's a busy time and you can't remember everything. So getting that bit of time on station with the staff and just building up a bit of a connection with them. I like to know what their aspirations are, where they want to go next. And I see that as a big part of my role is getting to know them and learning where they want to go helps me to move them in that direction.
And you're constantly advertising job opportunities. So there is a mailing list for people that are in this Antarctic employment pool. That's temporary contracts. And do you find that often people from, like you said, a GA, so a general assistant, move into different roles such as field assistant or even chef? I mean, some people take some pretty dramatic and winding career paths, which I find is something quite unique about the British Antarctic Survey. You've got this ability and flexibility once you know the system and the structure of how a polar station operates that you can fluidly move.
Definitely. Yeah, I think having station experience is so valuable and it helps people to move into the roles that they're hoping to go to. For example, this year we had someone move from a general assistant into the air unit ground coordinator role. So that's super exciting. And I think often people get the chance to observe other people's jobs and help out with other people's jobs. And that can give them the experience they need to move up into another role that they want to be in.
Yeah, I think that's something really rare, because in actual like normal life, how often are you actually assisting somebody in quite a different field to you? It's something that's like, whoa, I would never get this opportunity.
And I think it gives people appreciation for the jobs that other people are doing on station as well. And it just enhances the community on station. So I'm all for it. If people have got time to, you know, get involved with other people's jobs, I think that's great.
Is there a job that you saw on station that you thought, oh, maybe that would be quite a cool job that I'd like to theoretically transition to?
I mean, theoretically transition. And yeah, I guess when I was on station, I thought that the radio operators had a really cool job. Who knows if I could handle all of those radios at the same time? I'm just not sure.
I sometimes think of taking a break in academia to go and do a season as a tower operator. I always find it fascinating.
Yeah, it's really unique, something that I've not been able to see before. When do you ever get to go into a radio tower normally?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you get the behind the scenes of all the different jobs, which I thought was the best part about being on station.
And what was it like helping out in the kitchen? Have you ever been in an industrial kitchen before? And how did you find that community atmosphere of everyone mucking in and working towards cleaning the dishes?
Yeah, I did my day on GASH, which is galleon scullery hand, I think is what people call it. So I did my day of helping in the kitchen and I absolutely loved it. It was probably, it sounds weird, but my favourite day on station because I got to speak to so many different people. I got to know the chefs, I got to know the station support assistants, and then everyone that was bringing their plate for washing up, I got to talk to as well. So for a people person like me, it's the ideal job.
And then otherwise, during the rest of the time on station, do you have an office that you share with other people and people know where you are so they can come and talk to you about their initial experiences into this crazy new world?
Yeah, so I had an office alongside a lot of the other staff on station. It was just sort of a temporary space for visitors. But I let people know where I was and so people could come and visit. But I also tried to organise drop-in sessions for people that were in the building where the meals were taking place so that I was more likely to get people to come and talk to me. So yeah, I had those sort of drop-in sessions, but also just trying to see people in their natural environment of what they were doing. Tended to be the best conversations I had with people.
Oh, nice. That's really good.
And mealtimes. Mealtimes was really, really special. I tried to sit on a different table every evening to get to know people.
Good for you. Fun. And but exhausting, I suppose, if you've got that all day and then all into the evening and every single meal, there's you don't actually stop working. You just keep, your job keeps going. But great.
It doesn't feel like work when you're there. I think it's fun.
You say that this is the first time that you went away. Do you mean that's the first time that you left the UK when you went to Antarctica?
I had left the UK, but never for, you know, any more than like a holiday or going for a work trip for a few days. So, yeah, I hadn't moved away from home for university or anything like that. And I'd always been quite anxious about it growing up. You know, staying away from home wasn't my thing. So, yeah, when I deployed south, I think my family were quite shocked that I actually went away even for just a month. And I surprised myself too, and I'm really proud of it. So, yeah. I obviously, it's not the same as going away for 18 months, but as a personal goal, it was a big one.
Amazing. And I think that hopefully has given you quite a lot of confidence and you'll be able to do it again in your subsequent seasons.
And I hope that I can also encourage other people to do the same thing, you know, if they're feeling nervous to be able to encourage them and support them. I try to do that with other Cambridge staff if I can. If they're going away and they're feeling a bit nervous, I try to let them know that that's how I was feeling too and you'll be okay.
You're so good. This has been such a really good insight. And hopefully it'll also offer an opportunity for people that might be slightly on the fence about going to get a detailed insight and to know that there actually is a lot of support there, especially in your role whilst you're there on station. And you really do have a lot of guidance and instruction, which will just continue throughout your whole deployment.
Yeah, you've got that station community. And I think that's something special that you can't experience anywhere else.
It's very unique. Absolutely. And Michaela, what is it like seeing a penguin up close? Can you remember the first time you walked around the point and maybe encountered an adelie or a chinstrap or a gentoo?
That was, yeah, highlight of probably my entire life was seeing my first penguin. There actually wasn't that many when I was at Rotherhithe. I saw about two adelie penguins when I was there, but it was really early season. So I think that's why my actual most memorable penguin moment was when I saw my first penguin at King Edward Point. And that was a king penguin. So that was incredible. My heart was racing. I was so excited. And it was snowing a lot, which, you know, just added to the vibes. That was the trip that I did in March that was originally planned. I did the last call of the islands. So I travelled to Bird Island, Signy and King Edward Point to collect the summer staff before they were going into winter, which was really special to be able to wave and say goodbye to the winterers as they were just entering their winter season.
So apart from Halley, you visited every research station.
That's right.
For someone who thought they weren't going south when they first started the job.
I know, yeah, it was quite a shock, to be honest. And yeah, I feel really privileged to be able to have visited so many places already.
And to experience being on the ship, that's also something that in itself is a different community and lifestyle.
Yeah, the ship's really, really cool place to be. And hopefully if I go in to Rotherham next season, I might go in on the ship if it's late in the season. So.
And Michaela, what does Antarctica mean to you?
Apart from it being my favourite place on the planet, to me, it's incredible people doing incredible things to support polar science. And I'm so happy to play even a small part in that.
That's lovely. And I'm so glad that you can be part of that. And also, long may it continue.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Nadia.
The process of pre-deployment training might sound daunting, but it is so important to make sure you have all the skills and support you'll need to enjoy and do your best in your new role. And that does include ceilidh dancing. And if you are looking for a new role, visit bass.ac.uk/jobs/vacancies, where the latest openings are posted. You'll find all kinds of work, from science-based positions to operations. Next time, we'll hear from Tom Davis-Merry and Ed Luke, a new and a past wintering field guide, about what to pack for Antarctica. If you enjoyed Ice World, tell us. Make sure you leave a review on the Ice World page or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, 5-star reviews are our favourite. I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.